This week on the Blue Crew, I'm very happy to welcome on a co-host that's a guest host. I'm not sure how to really describe him. My cousin, the reason why I love the Rangers, he's been on before, a recurring guest, but today he's filling in since Avery and Cody are busy doing other shit. So welcome back to the show, Jason Biznoff. Jason, how are you?
I'm good. Maybe we should do like a cousin Jason, like cousin Sal from Jimmy Kimmel or something. I could just be like the token cousin and we don't have to go into any more depth about my formal role here at the Blue Crew.
I don't watch that show very often, so I'm unfamiliar with the reference, but great to have you, and I'll ignore that you said that. let's continue. So, you know, I obviously talk to you almost every day about the Rangers, but it's all over text and stuff, and you're probably, fair to say, one of the more opinionated people that I know about this team. And usually optimistic, sometimes pessimistic, but I think this year a little bit more optimistic, if I'm right.
Yeah, for sure.
So give me your... Well, I think you texted me like after the Seattle game, like, okay, maybe we're good again. So give me your take. Originally, I know you were kind of against the thought of the Rangers being good this year prior to the start of the season. Obviously, now it's easy to be optimistic after the 5-game road trip. But where are you mentally right now?
The way I've been phrasing to people, I'm ready to be hurt again. Yep. I'm like the person who, you know, fool me once, shame on you. I'm on like fool me, you know, every year of my life, shame on me. You know, we're still in that same window, kind of the post letter window that opened much quicker than we thought. So I'm optimistic. I mean, a 5-game win streak on the road, how could you not be? I think Laviolette, despite pretty obviously being not their first choice, like they clearly fired Gallant with no plan B, has looked awesome. I mean, you can see the difference of a real X's and O's guy because they seem, I mean, the 1-3-1's working really well. And the lack of line shuffling, I think all of us, most of Rangers Twitter is very happy to see actual line consistency for a while. Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this. Who has been a big surprise? I know there's been a lot. Your biggest surprise, and I have a feeling I know who you're going to say. And then who has been your somewhat disappointment?
You know, to have a bit of an original answer, because obviously the team has been led by the usual characters this year, which is good. I mean, like the question has always been later in the year, could we get over the hump by having secondary help? But the names you expect have been amazing, namely Panarin, who continues to be the latest Rangers player that fans really, really don't appreciate enough and hopefully will before he's gone. Mm-hmm. But Erik Gustafsson has been a name that has really stood out. That sixth defensive spot has been like a black hole. Your Ben Harpers, your whoever else. I tried to block out
most of the names. Zach Jones.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Don't, man. Come on. I just had lunch. It's been really cool. Not only see consistency there. I mean, he's just really like, it feels like the defense is really set. It feels really secure. As far as disappointments, has been a contract I hated since the start, but I must admit, came out really good the first couple of years. That Goodrow contract is really starting to come home to roost, mm-hmm. especially because I don't think we're getting out from under it. I think we are buying it out next year. So with the cap crunch and everything, that is a tough position to be in. It was obvious like the day it was signed that it was one of those cups in the room thing that is way too like 1990s 100 hockey men thought. Yeah. Like, so he had a really good first 2 years, but the paying him 3.64 is finally, we all knew it. It's finally, that bill's come due.
It's also tough to see Frank Vatrano like tied for lead in goals right now and knowing you're paying Goodrow that money that you probably could have gave to Frank. But I want to talk about the 5-game road trip specifically. Was there one game or one of those wins that stood out to you most?
I think it will keep in mind as the father of an 18-month-old, I was not up for all of those games. Mm-hmm. But that last game, they didn't play great. They kind of were a little flat and just finding a way late to get that goal. The Trouba pass to Panarin was also like nasty. maybe the prettiest goal of the year so far. So that doesn't hurt. Between that and then that late penalty, which we all probably didn't like, and finding a way to not only get the tying goal late, but then to find a way to get the overtime goal despite coming out down a man. I think the thing that this team is going to have to learn to do, which, you know, if you look at the big conference finals run and then the Devils series last year, is when they hit a wall to push through it. You know, both those series, they were up 2-0, and as soon as they hit resilience, to find a way to win where you're kind of flat, which you're going to have nights. I mean, you know, both of our mutual friend Harrison likes to say they're not trying. Like, you're going to have nights of 82 that just it isn't clicking. to find a way to win those games is really great.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And the you know, the whole message I think that I've been trying to put out is bend, don't break, right? Like I've been preaching that it's not like a no quit anything anymore, because like to me, and I don't want to go on a rant here, but the no quit thing is like, oh, they're going down 4-1, like, but all of a sudden they come back and find a way to win. This is different, right? Like they're in every game. It's not like they're getting blown out or whatever, and they're finding ways to claw their way back. It's, you know, they're playing fine. It's a one goal game. Something bad happens, but they recover. It's to me, that's not quitting. That's just like being able to kind of handle adversity and not break in half. You know, I think that's kind of what they've been doing this year. But to me, I think the game that stood out the most in that trip was the Vancouver game. Just so much back and forth. Obviously a lot of calls, you know, did go the Rangers way. And then, you know, that overtime was fucking crazy. They get outplayed and they find a way to score a goal. And I thought a guy you were going to bring up was Keandre Miller, because Keandre had quite the road trip, 6 points in five games, and had that overtime winner. I'm surprised, because you're very high in Keandre Miller. So I thought you were going to say he's been a pleasant surprise as well. 7 points in nine games.
We make a couple good points there. First of all, Keandre Miller is very big deal in the Biznoff home, especially with Mrs. Biznoff. Mrs. Biznoff loves her some Keandre Miller. He is the current belt holder, most handsome. He's the most handsome Ranger right now. That's pretty definitive. The Henrik Lundqvist Most Handsome Ranger Award is currently held by Keandre Miller.
That's true.
For sure. And you can go through the roster. I'm thinking,
right now. Schneider's up there for sure. Schneider's a good looking guy.
Not a bad looking guy. But the other point you make, I think one thing that it's really early in the year, but some of the great accounts, Valakhet being one of them, who plug out the put out advanced numbers for idiots like me and you who can't get that deep into them. It's one of the first years they're actually starting to outplay teams in a night in, night out basis. And I think you're right. As we pivot from the no quit New York, the plucky bunch, to like being the better team 90% of regular season games, which if we fancy ourselves what we should be on paper, that's it. It's like, yeah, tomorrow night against Carolina, we will be hopefully an even team, but realistically on paper, probably the inferior team. Most nights we're going to play a team we're supposed to beat. And I agree with you that like starting to win in that way, in that we expect to win way, is a big thing that they're going to have to start to do.
Well, also even just talking about that Carolina game, and not to get too in deep on it, but Carolina has had a really rocky start this year. They're on a 3-game winning streak right now, but you know, you look back to 2021, since those years, Carolina has been a top 5 defensive team, and right now they're a bottom 5 defensive team. So you look at the Rangers offense right now, their power play, how they're clicking, like the Rangers could easily, you know, take it to Carolina, I think, tonight as people are listening, because this comes out on Thursday. And you know, you kind of had that fear going into the season, and I think a narrative was, okay, the top tier in the Metro is Devils, Carolina. Then it's like Rangers, Penguins, Islanders, Capitals. Then it's Columbus, Philly. But right now, what we're seeing in the Metro is just a complete debacle of teams right now. I think, you know, you look at the bottom and Pittsburgh's at the bottom. Now the Capitals announced that Backstrom's going to miss or taking time away from the season. Columbus is obviously, Line A's out, and, you know, they're a fucking mess to begin with. And then, you know, the rest is kind of a crapshoot. Like the Devils aren't this elite, crazy Devils team that everyone expected to be. Their goaltending's an issue, just like people talked about this summer, and this thing's up for grabs, and there's no reason why the Rangers can't continue to go on this path and maybe win the Metro. But I guess what I'm leading to is your biggest storyline in the Metro so far. Is it the Rangers and how well they're doing, or is it the Devils and how mid they are? Not mid, because they are a really good team, but I guess they're underperforming. Or is it a team like the Flyers that has looked pretty solid and surprise teams?
Yeah, somebody has to take the Metro's keys away from it, because it's drunk. It cannot drive. It has been a wacky start.
How many times you used that one?
I just thought of that as you were talking. That's the first time, I swear. Yeah. But that, instead of listening to you, which I should have done, I got to work on my listening comprehension. You know the question? I'm going to kind of cheat on my answer. I think the biggest story in the Metro is that for the first time in my recollection, but I also don't have a great memory, I think the Atlantic may take 5 playoff spots. I think the Metro
really
may end up with 3. I mean, Boston didn't fade, but the Pens and the Caps seem to be. Those like 3 teams, it was like, are they finally going to stop being perennial? Tampa, if they could hold the ship till Vas gets back. Toronto, we can slot in already with a playoff spot. Florida is still a talented team. And I'm forgetting the roster in the Atlantic, but there's Toronto. Someone else.
Toronto.
I said Toronto. You could pencil in. But either way, like I think it's entirely possible the Metro boasts, I still think, you know, I would bet a lot of money Carolina, us, and New Jersey are in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But after that, you know, especially there's a lot of stats out there about like the teams in the playoffs on Thanksgiving, like
yeah, I saw that 95. Today
too. Yeah, yeah. Every year it comes up.
Bob was shooting. You saw that?
Oh, I didn't see it today. I've just seen it so many times come up. It comes up every November. So, I mean, the Pens and the Caps are digging themselves a decent hole already. Will Ilya Sorokin be able to Henrik Lundqvist that team by just dragging them, kicking and screaming to the playoffs? And I think Columbus and Philly, their talent inferiority is going to catch up. So I think and it's been the opposite for a long time, where it's been the Metro was the strongest division in hockey. I think the bottom may fall out a little bit in the division, which good for us.
Yeah. So Bob Wischusen tweeted today, how much does October, November mean in the NHL? I found these stats amazing. If your team is in a playoff spot by today, they're 67% to make the playoffs. That number goes to nearly 80% by Thanksgiving. Obviously, teams can rally, but these first 2 months are so important. So kudos to the Rangers for the strong start. I still think it's going to be 4-4. I just think the Metro is really strong, and I think the Atlantic, like the teams that are disappointing right now are the Buffalo Sabres, the Ottawa Senators, who got off to a hot start. Like, you know, these are the sexy teams before the season that, you know, haven't performed up to par thus far.
You're forgetting Detroit.
I think Detroit, for the most part, was like, okay, they'll take a step in the right direction, but they're not ready to make the playoffs yet. But now they're overperforming for sure. Their offense has been incredible. Their power play.
And those points, you bank those points. Those points stay there. And Gary Bettman's loser point makes it really hard to move through the playoffs.
So before we get into some fan questions, is there any hot take or topic that you want to bring up?
I mean, I said it and I glanced over it because it's kind of obvious, but, you know, I've been watching the Rangers, you know, I'm 32 years old, 20 years or so, been following them really closely. The Zibanejad, Panarin, Kreider, Fox, Shesterkin, like top 50, Kreider maybe, skaters in the NHL, and Ruff Kreider makes that cut, but that we have right now on our roster is pretty incredible. You know, and that's why that secondary help is what could put us over, because I think, and I don't have a list of rosters in front of me, so I may eat these words. If you take the five best players on any roster in the league, I think we hang with anyone in the league. I know, like, look, McDavid, Draisaitl, but after that, it gets a little more sparse. I mean, we have a debatable top. We have a perennial Norris, the best net front presence in the league. We have the any given year, potentially the Vezina guy. And then Zibanejad and Panarin are top 25 skaters right now, period. That's a pretty crazy top tier to be boasting. And this year they've come out and just all of them are buzzing.
I'd say the only team right now that comes to mind that might be on a different level is Colorado with Nate, Kale, Mikko Rantanen. Like those are arguably three top 10 players. Like those guys are fucking sick.
100%. But then you're comparing Shesterkin and Georgiev, which is.
But Georgiev had 40 wins last year. Like he's not a bad goalie. I know he was the backup and there's a lot of bad taste from Rangers fans with Georgiev.
Oh,
but, he's proven.
I'm not against Georgiev, but, and that's another, you know, and not to get too in the weeds. We also have the fact when you look at the teams we could match up in the playoffs with, because realistically that's what Rangers fans are thinking. Mm-hmm. There are what, five or six teams right now with a rock solid goalie. You know, you have Soros, Ottinger, Vasilevsky, Sorokin, Shesterkin. I think I'm forgetting. Oh, Hellebuck.
Omar. After Swayman.
I don't know if those guys are on that same tier.
Those two are fucking elite. They are.
I guess together. It's. But my point, fine, that's seven teams in a 32-team league. That like
Jonathan Quick?
Yeah, but keep in mind that the champions last year won with Aiden Hill. Yeah. So like having one of those six or seven every night, I feel good with this guy, is an advantage in every series we're going to play for the most part.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right, let's get into some fan questions. The first one from Joe Manz. Joe Manzi 55. Of all the great things going on, what would you say is our weakness so far?
Fourth line.
I agree.
I think you need to, you know, I'm much
not
I'm
Nick
very
Bonino,
skeptical
though. Nick Bonino has been fucking great.
Yeah, I'm very skeptical about how much fourth lines matter anymore. Like I feel the opposite about Lou Lamoriello about what goes on in hockey. Like I think the heavy 90s style doesn't win you anymore. But they can't be a net negative. And right now they are a net negative when they're out there.
Well, your fourth line's job is really just to not get scored on. It's to be out there, give your top guys rest, and not allow the puck in your own net. Like, that's really
what a fourth line. And maybe make a few guys going through the middle a little skittish. Like, that's it.
If they score a goal, it's just a huge plus. But yeah, I would agree the fourth line, I think, is an issue. And I would say not weakness, but disappointment is the production from Kreider, Mika, and Kako at 5-on-5. I think this time last year, everyone was like, oh my God, if this line sticks together, they're going to put up so many points. Like, they're getting so many chances. I think to start this year, they looked fine, but they haven't looked nearly as good as they did at the start of last year. And Kako, I think, has just been, I don't want to say lacking confidence, because he looked super confident in the preseason, but I think because he's not putting up the points right now, it's starting to hinder him a little bit. But then again, he's playing fine. It's just not what I think we all hoped for this year. And I think we're used to saying that now for so many years in a row. But it's not like it's a negative. It's just like, fuck, man. Like, I just want him to score and like put up points, you know?
Yeah, because it feels like with those guys, a lot of those young guys, like, it's such a confidence thing. And so if you laugh seeing the puck go in like this, I think it makes a big difference. I think right now the only reason that line I'm not as worried about is at this early juncture, because you have such a small sample size of points, you do have a lot of advanced numbers. And so, like, they're still controlling play. And I think over 82, if their, like, expected goals are good, the goals will come.
Mm-hmm. For sure. All right, next one. John C. Leo. Genuine thoughts, feelings on Kane making a return to the Rangers?
He looked not great last year. Obviously, his hip was a problem. Wheeler has been disappointing, but I think Wheeler plays with his brain a lot, and so it's going to take him time. He's not a freak athlete, so I want to give him some more time. I think Kane is a big name, but I think right now, like, if I had to add something at the deadline, like, a couple depth forwards in that fourth line may get us further than Patrick Kane right now. I don't know. It's a lot of times now in the deadline, and we do not have the money till the deadline. And Patrick Kane plays for $1 million, which I've seen crazier things with the Rangers.
Mm-hmm. I would say, if anything, if we're talking about would Patrick Kane want to come back here, I think if you watch this team now over the last 2 weeks, I think it's a much sexier option than it was maybe at the start of the year. I know the other teams in the mix are Buffalo, who's been a little disappointing. Detroit might be a little bit more attractive now with their start. And then I think Dallas was another team in the mix that, you know, is definitely going to be a contender out of the West. But I think if you are Kane right now, you're looking at this Rangers group, seeing how Laviolette coaches them, and you're thinking, hey, like, I could win a cup here. And, you know, I think he enjoyed his time here last year despite the ending, but I don't see why he wouldn't want to come at this point. Do I think the Rangers need him? I don't think it would hurt them, but I don't think it would put them over the edge at the same time.
I think Wheeler's slot is really what's going to come down to. Yeah. Like, if he finds his game, and I think you make a really good point. I think watching where Buffalo is in the standings is really the biggest thing, because if Buffalo is in the playoffs, that guy's going to want to try to be a part of the first Buffalo playoff team in what, 12 years or something. Like, that would be cool for him as a hometown.
100%. I totally agree. I also think if the Wheeler thing continues to, you know, not be what I think everyone hopes it would be, I could see Kako moving down to that spot and maybe Kane slotting in on the first line. Like, they're going to have to put up points, you know? So I think that could be a possibility, but that's like a hypothetical, obviously. Next one from, and I laugh at this one every time. Chris is neck deep. Seeing how quick did on the road or on the road trip, think we'll see him giving Igor more breaks.
It's a good problem to have. I mean, we are not in the Henrik Lundqvist 70 games a year world anymore. No. And I'm hitting my quota of Henrik mentions in one podcast as I always have to.
That's three, I think, right? Is that three?
I think so. I'm shocked by how good Quick has looked. Pleasantly shocked.
I don't think there's anyone who like would have expected that, right? I think everyone is kind of in shock as well.
It's a really good problem to have, especially because, like I said, you know, if we bank a few more points this early, it's crazy to say, but like, you're already starting to think about the playoffs. And I know that sounds insane, but like, that's today's NHL.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. That's how it goes. And I think, you know, if Quick does keep playing well, like, you know, obviously there are analytics and there's certain ways to go about the way you go into your goaltending and how many games they play. I'd say, you know, it's a safe bet to say Igor plays 55 to 57 this year, which quick math gives Quick 25 starts. But, you know, if he plays well, I would say ride the hot goalie while you can, you know? I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If you can give Igor any extra rest, like, why not fucking do it, right? Like, we saw
100%. And I think Benoit Allaire should go to the Raptors when he retires. Yeah. I think we should find a way to have
that's a real possibility.
I mean, what other goalie coach gets that ovation opening night and just deserves it? I mean, it is. I Jonathan Quick being an unbelievable backup after Cam Talbot, after Georgiev, after this Valakat, this Marty Biron, like this guy, unbelievable.
I agree. All right, next one, Bilitris X9. The bottom six needs to get a lot faster. Who do we think we can add to help with that? Assuming everyone wants us to say Brennan Othman.
You cut me off. I was going to say, with all the talk of like Kane, of adding, like, Othman is still sitting there at some point. I think he should play a full AHL season. I think his long term is the most important. But when the late add up, you know, where we all fell in love with Kreider the first time, what's it called? Black Aces or whatever. When that comes, I think it'd be a great option. And I think the Rangers also, and this is a really important thing for just like the Rangers, like, dynasty franchise is we need to start like having homegrown talent again. And so Othman Akuli, I think, has looked awesome. I don't think the points have been there, but I think he's looked awesome. And also really nice to recuperate some of that Elias Anderson debacle to have something to show for it.
I'd say Cooley and Trocheck are pretty fast on third line.
I think the whole Kane talk, I mean, Brennan Othman, if Brennan Othman is buzzing, I know Patrick Kane is maybe the greatest American player ever, but he's older and coming off hip surgery. Like, could Othman be more productive than Kane down the stretch? That's not like a crazy thought, I don't think. But Kane, then again, has been there so many times and won entire seasons on his stick. So I guess maybe I'm getting a little crazy here.
Well, I think the wording is off. I think Othman could – it's not crazy to say Othman could be more effective, but I think Kane would put up more points for sure.
Yeah.
It's two different things. But I know what you're saying. That's kind of what you're getting at, I think, right?
Well, if you decide to use that money on someone else instead of Kane and you bring up Othman, you kind of having your cake and eating it too, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, next one from Tom Olson, and you'll like this one. Should the Rangers get rid of Gaudreau if he has less than 10 points by January 1st?
Can the Rangers get rid of Gaudreau? That's the question. We are no strangers to buyouts. This is not that egregious. Also, like, one thing to mention about Gaudreau is, again, my second Gary Bettman reference as I hit that quota too. Mm-hmm. Gary Bettman's reign of terror of flat cap is almost over. We're going to have two straight seasons of about $4 or $5 million to spend, and we're the Rangers. Like, it's going to be like, pick who you want for $4 or $5 million. Never forget, Artemi Panarin took a pay cut not to be an Islander, to be a Ranger.
But you also have signed Lindgren too.
There will be people to sign too, but like we have impressively, and I give Drury credit for this, we have made it through I didn't think we would be able to hold on to Lindgren and Trouba and Kreider until now. And we've kind of made it past the worst of it, which was that those few years. The fact that like guys like Laff actually didn't bust out on their rookie deal kind of saved us in a weird way if they ended up becoming something.
I agree. Anthony Governale 19. What else would you guys like to see from this team? We look great, but not perfect.
5-on-5. Especially because the playoffs, we're not going to get the power plays. Because apparently the sport is a different sport and the refs call it as a different sport.
Well, when you say 5-on-5, are you saying in general or scoring? Like, I think the 5-on-5 defensively has been fine.
Yeah. You're totally right. Important for you to make that distinction. I think, 5-on-5 scoring it is what it's going to be. And then, I mean, I feel like I'm in Groundhog Day, secondary scoring. It is really cool to have Panarin, Zibanejad, Jad, Kreider, and Fox, but they cannot do it alone. I think you're totally right. By the end of the year, like, Miller could be the next name on that list. I think that's interesting. And you could be the winner of a bet with Mike Riddell as well.
He texted me yesterday. He was like, fuck, you're killing me with this Miller Lindholm bet, because Lindholm has no points right now in the first like 7 games or 8 games for Boston.
Well, that's not, you know, in his defense, that's not Lindholm's calling card. He's a great defenseman.
Last year he put up like 50 points.
I didn't know that.
It was very tight. It was very tight.
Yeah. Rangers fans who haven't, I mean, non-Rangers fans who have not watched Andre Miller don't realize the flashes of what he, like, his ceiling to me is still like Norris. Like he, just his length, his he's he can I mean he's just 6'5". Like forget everything else. Like he's just like he still has a crazy ceiling and he's putting it together and it's really cool to watch.
The only issue is that on this team, he's never going to get power play opportunity. Like it's just when you have Adam Fox, he's just never going to overpower that. Like you can't have a Norris winner that doesn't play power play, you know?
I wonder, and you know the league better than I do, are there teams that have two productive power play lines? Because like that's been one thing we haven't had, or is it most great power plays are just like the Ovechkin, like we're leaving out there for 2 minutes type thing?
Well, the Caps actually have had a shit power play the last couple of years, which has been a big surprise.
No,
But
I mean
no,
just in
I know what you're
general.
saying.
Yeah.
I think for the most part, more teams, at least the successful power plays, are heavily dominated by the first unit. But you know, there are some teams that have a pretty balanced one and two. I think one that comes to mind would be Ottawa. I'd have to stat check, but I think their power play has looked solid both units thus far. And again, no stats in front of me, just you know, from what I've seen.
Yeah.
But for
And
the
you could
most
also
part.
see him, could you see two defensemen on the power play if Miller becomes a better option than, say, a Trocheck to have out there? Just, I know you'd have to reshuffle the positioning because you have to move a guy out of the bumper and all that.
I just don't think Keandre is a power play guy. I think he
Yeah.
is talented offensively, but when he underhandles pucks and doesn't complicate his game, that's when he's successful. When he's asked to do a little bit more offensively, I think that's what kind of fucks with him a little bit. You know, I think there was a couple of attempts where him and Gustafson were quarterback in the second unit, and you can just tell Keandre's not, he's not really an offensive first guy. So I think that's why it's a little tough, right? Like
Versus
Gustafson's a
Fox,
little
who
bit.
somehow can like have three guys closing in on him and not sweat an ounce.
So I think it's different. Like Keandre is really strong offensively, but not in the power play situation, I would say. All right, let's go to the next one. Chris Rodriguez, 67. If the Rangers were to bring up Othman, what line would you put him on? I'd put him in Wheeler's spot right now.
Yeah, I mean, but and
Just
that's
as a
one of the
start.
problems. Yeah, but that's one of the weird things that like always defined this team is you had a team that was rebuilding, you had a team that got two top two picks, which they shouldn't have gotten mathematically, and also signed Artemi Panarin and also had Chris Kreider have a very late breakout. I mean, it I know like we haven't had the cup to answer for it, but we have a log jam of talent. It's a really good problem to have. It's just putting it all together. One name that hasn't come up. Oh, go ahead.
I would say like I wouldn't mind seeing Othman play with Mika and Kreider for a bit. Like, why not? Let's
The
try that.
problem becomes, I mean, the really crazy thing to say, which is like the unspoken thing, which we all don't want to talk about, is when do you stop? At what point do Kako and Laf stop getting the treatment of what they hope they'll be versus what they are? And there's a certain amount of time, and they're nowhere near that. But 25, 26, like remember Jimmy Vesey came onto our team as like this phenom out of college. At a certain point, he's made a great career. But we stopped trying to fit him onto the top six. We're like, okay, he's good. He's not going to be great. If it, you know, when does that happen? And is that a time where Othman starts to be the new young guy we're trying to put in a position to grow?
I'd say it's not this year, but next year, because they both, well, Kako is on a contract here this year, if I'm correct, right? He is.
I think so.
And Lafreniere just signed that 2 year deal. So next year for him. So I think after these two, it's kind of like, here's what we got. So let's see what we can make of it.
The best looking of the kids this year by a far distance, I think, has been Hedl. And the points aren't there, but Hedl looks so strong and fast going through the middle and routinely makes plays that like not many people can make. Like gets into spaces that guys who are not special don't get into.
I said that last week. He was like my MVP of the road trip, even though the production wasn't really there. And obviously that's a stretch of a pick with how Foxy and Panarin played. But
Yeah.
just like you said, the little things that don't really go on the score sheet. But next one from Connor Haggerty. Would love to see Cooley get a chance as a net front presence on PP2. Do you guys agree? I don't see why not. He's a big, strong body. Like, get his confidence going, maybe bang home some rebounds. Like, I'm all for it. And plus, like, sorry to go first, but like the second unit doesn't get so many reps where it like wouldn't kill momentum, you know?
That's the PP2 problem is you want if we're still trying to bring these kids along and kind of give them baby steps, like it would be great for them to have more time there because the chances of them seeing the puck go in increase. But when PP1 is the best unit in hockey, is that like a crazy sentence? I don't think so. The best power play unit in hockey, end when your 5-on-5 production is kind of not as strong as you'd like, you can't be like foregoing those valuable minutes in order to, help those guys along. So it becomes this like, I'd love to give them more power play time, but right now we need, every single Mika Zibanejad one timer we can get.
Next one from Ryan Murray, 1624. Best Rangers jersey of all time.
Easy. The original Liberties. I have a Gretzky waiting for my son hanging. I think you had it at one point too, hanging in my closet. That original Liberty is the best jersey ever.
We've talked about it on here. I think I like the white one better than the blue one.
That's a hot take.
The white one is fucking clean. I also love white jerseys. I'm a big fan of white. I think white just
Bring
like
white
looks.
back at home, baby. Bring white
That's why
back
I've
at
been
home.
saying that for a long time. White is sick. I like the white look. I'm all
Though the
for it.
Rangers jersey also just is just a classic jersey.
Yeah, it's the best jerseys. All right, next one. Not a question, but I love it. Willie White 17. Fuck the Canes. Let's get a dub. Next one, Mark
Well put.
Schiraldi. Yeah. Very, very well formed. Next one, Mark Schiraldi. I think Hedl and Kako need to step up more. What do you think? And then Avery, when is Kane coming? We already discussed that. So Hedl and Kako need to step up more. What do you think? Hedl just has to finish. He's got to score goals.
He
Kako,
don't
I
have to
think.
finish.
Kako
Hedl's
could
been
be more
playing amazing.
aggressive. We could be more aggressive.
The
Kako.
thing with Kako is though, Kako should just like let Mika and Kreider bring him along. It is the, like, and just like if that line stays a net positive line like it has, and Kako is on it, things will just come to him. So I almost don't mind him being a little timid to start because he's playing with the best combo on the team. Like I don't mind him just being like, I'm gonna just be here with them. And they will figure it out. And after 20, 25 games without being shuffled, they'll start to know where to find me. Because if you look how Kreider and Zibanejad find each other, I mean,
It's insane.
yeah, if
Yeah.
Kako can get a tenth of that, it's going to be really good for him. And
I
we're
agree.
9 games in. We're 9 games
Yeah.
in, people.
Yeah. But also again, like 9 games in last year, it was like Kako's been the best forward on the team. He just can't find a way to score, you know? It's been a little different, I think, in that regard.
Would have
But
been really
this one
cool if we got the first. Really would have been really cool if we got the first pick that year.
Yeah. Dude, also like not to totally glaze Jack Hughes, but how much of a fucking rock star would that kid be in New York City playing for the Rangers? Like he already is with the Devils, but like imagine him as a Ranger, like, oh my God, he's sick.
Some of the stupider conversations that I participated in were the trying to convince ourselves that Kako was going to be better right after the draft. I was because Jack. Oh, Jack Hughes also looked like he was 11 years old, which helped us. Like, but yeah, no, I think the jury's out on that one.
This one is for me, Johnny from the Hockey News. How do you come up with your questions to ask players? It's kind of like a feel thing, right? Like I always something I do, win or lose, I always go into the winner's locker room, whether it's the Rangers or the team they're playing against, and I think you just get better quotes from the guys that are in a better mood and want to talk to you. So, for example, I went into the Preds locker room after the Rangers lost to Nashville at home a couple weeks ago, and talked to Philip Forsberg and basically asked him like on his end, like what did you guys do to beat the Rangers? Like what was their weakness? So you kind of get the other perspective, right? So you're not getting the same answers and same kind of perspective all the time. And in my own experience, I fucking hated talking to people after I lost, and I didn't even like, you came to my game and at UMass, and I didn't even like acknowledge you in warm up. I was so locked in, right? Like you guys were banging on the boards. I remember in Wichita Falls, didn't you like sit behind the bench or something? Or was that my mom?
Sounds about right. Both of those sound about right.
But no, I think it's you got to understand like how the players think, and a lot of the times after you lose, you just want to get the fuck out of there. So I don't like to go into losing locker rooms. Of course, I like to get my quote from Laviolette about his thoughts in the game, but the way I go about it is just what would I want to talk about if I were in the situation. So I think that's kind of how I feel it.
Well,
But yeah,
not to, I believe the cool young person term you used was glaze. I'm not familiar with this. I'm an old man, but not to glaze you. I can tell what it means from context. People also underestimate that, and I've underestimated in the past, but how much the level of hockey you played makes a difference. I think there are a lot of journalists who never played at a high level but know the game really great. That being said, like things I've watched the game with you and things you notice. I'm sure when you ask a Philip Forsberg about certain breakout strategies that like I've been watching this game for 25 years. I played at the lowest of levels, but it's just the way you see the game is different. I'm sure that comes at an advantage when you're talking to these guys.
Yeah, I definitely play into my playing career for sure. But also I think like there's just certain ones where I know people don't want to be asked, you know, like you gotta give and choose and kind of pick your spots on when to ask the controversial stuff, when to ask the stuff that, you know, you kind of like, there's always times where you have to ask things too, right? Like you have to ask about a certain play that happens when it's the trend of the game. But yeah, let's move on. This last one from Jackknife82. You're going to like this one too. Are Laviolette and Housley unlocking the full potential of Keandre Miller?
Laviolette is doing a lot right. I think I don't know actually though if the key thing, I think Key is like one of the few guys, because sometimes fans have this stupid notion that like development will be linear, that it'll be just this, you know, the same way you look at like any chart that goes just up into the corner. I think Key's actually though had a very linear development. He didn't start playing defense till midway through college. And so actually I think a big part of his catch up has just been like positioning and stuff, because all the raw talent is there. So actually with Lav, I think it's more been just every year Key's getting better. I also think one underestimated thing about a guy who I really like, but obviously will never live up to his contract, is having Truba next to Key has been extremely helpful for him, especially as another tall guy, a guy who really, I think, thinks the game really well, has helped Key along every year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Keandre's spoken to Truba's leadership, right? Like, in multitudes about how important that he's been for his development. And I think the one thing I will say about the on-ice stuff with Laviolette and Keandre Miller, and you can add Housley to that as well, with the way Laviolette likes to set up their neutral zone, and I know that's like the popular thing about Laviolette's coaching system, is that it allows Keandre to be more aggressive and pick his spots and like be at the red line and gap up tighter on players and not sit back and accept the rush, but attack it instead. Like, it's a more aggressive Miller because that's what Laviolette has allowed the players to be. And I think that's been so beneficial toward his game as well. Like, Keandre isn't afraid to join the rush as much, knowing that the players are more defensively sound and knowing that there will be someone covering his spot if needed.
I think you do make a good point that everyone out there seems to be a little bit more risk-taking, which is good, yeah. I think, especially early in the year. Like, if you're going to give guys the opportunity to take these risks and test the boundaries, like, why not in the first 9 games on a 5-game road trip on the West Coast? Like, that we're all going to forget about eventually.
Well, it's also the biggest thing, it's layers, right? Like, you see what the 1-3-1 does. It's if one guy gets burned, guess what? The guy carrying the puck on the opposition has to beat 3 guys now to at least get over the blue line with possession. So it's all about how you layer, how you backtrack. Like, if you notice, like, oh shit, when the Rangers are skating back through the neutral zone, like, you're always picking up that weak side guy. You're always making sure you're outnumbering them on the attack, because that's how odd man rushes are created. Hockey's all about creating mini 2-on-1s, like, whether it's coming up the ice, you know, look at the power play breakout, right? A lot of teams do that drop pass so they can 2-on-1 the penalty killer in the middle and make one pass beat a guy. So I think that's a big thing with the Rangers, is that they know if one guy gets beaten, there's these other layers that are there to pick them up. And that's why I think the Rangers have done a way better job at limiting man rushes this year and limiting those shifts where we see them get burned for 2 minutes in their own zone. Like, you haven't seen much of that this season.
No,
a lot of it is, you know,
which we're used to watching. No, we have watched, I've said this recently to someone, this is maybe the first year since I've been a close Rangers fan, let's say beginning of Henrik, where we're shaping up to be a team that actually in advanced numbers is good. Like, it was a lot of years of like, our advanced numbers suck, yet we're in the second round of playoffs. The secret was Henrik. The secret was Igor. We may actually be not leaving those guys out to dry and actually play, you know, winning games from a dominant position, from a position of we are the better team here.
Well, that's it for fan questions. Do you have any final thoughts before I let you go? And now you can stop texting me every day to get you on the pod for at least a couple weeks.
You bought yourself maybe a week, but I think I think my final thoughts are Panarin and Fox. It needs to be said again. They're tearing it apart. Rangers fans, Artemi Panarin is the best player we've had in a long time. He slacked in the playoffs a couple of years, but one of those years scored the biggest Rangers goal in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. Cherish this man. He's amazing. Up there.
Well, 10 is 2014, so.
Fine. Five. Fair. glad to be here. Always a pleasure. Looking forward to my next chance. And let's go Rangers. Oh, hi, Mom. Hi, Aunt Karen.
Let me actually ask you one more question, because I forgot who I saw talking about this. And I hate when I forget because I like to credit the people. But I saw a debate, I believe, of which player, since I know you're very high in Henrik Lundqvist, so I imagine he's your answer, but who is the more iconic New York Ranger, Mark Messier or Henrik Lundqvist?
Oof.
I feel like I saw this debate.
Yeah. It's apples and oranges. I mean, Henrik with a cup is the Henrik with a cup is undeniably the best Ranger ever. Which the lack of cup is not his fault. I still think Henrik, I mean, Messier was a better Oiler, but Messier delivered the first cup in 54 years.
It's a tough question.
Oh, you're asking me to murder one of my children. I don't know. But Henrik, I mean, Henrik is the best goalie of his generation. And I think besides Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin, the best player of his generation. So it is tough to live up to. Messi is also a top 10 skater ever. So we're really, I'll just keep complimenting both of them until you forget what question you asked.
Well, I was going to say, I think, I don't know if you've seen this, like it was, you're not on TikTok probably, but there was a trending woman on TikTok who, like, you know, they asked her the question, like, I think, what's your most outrageous sports take? And it was like the LeBron MJ debate. No one would say that MJ is better if LeBron came first. So I think it's different, right? If Lundqvist came before Messier, I think Messier is undoubtedly the more iconic Ranger. But because Messier was first, won the cup first, and then Hank, like if Messier had won the cup after Hank, it's Messier. But because, like, am I making sense? Or I feel like now I'm just confusing myself.
Well, if they both won cups, it makes more sense.
If they both won cups, it's clearly Hank for sure.
Yeah.
But
I think one thing along those lines is it is quickly shaping up where, like, which is weird because he was never a top 10 skater in a single season, but Chris Kreider's ended up being one of, like, the great Rangers of all time. And it is a crazy thing because he, like, obviously had a 50 goal year, like, for sure. But in that season, let's not kid ourselves, there were 10 guys you would start a team with before him. His career shaped up is really weird, like, just consistent, great force in the lock, like just a real, like, Mr. Ranger type guy. It's a really interesting career arc, especially with his very, very late
resurgence.
And he's reinvented himself. I mean, he's become Joe Pavelski, who at 38 years old was still tipping pucks in. So
he's got to go the second most power play goals in the last 3 years behind Draisaitl.
Yeah, and he may not be done anytime soon because now he's not relying on his speed like he used to. He's relying on the tipping, which is, like, again, Joe Pavelski was doing that at 38 at a high level.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's all I've got. So we're good?
We're good. Hi, Mom. Hi, Aunt Karen.
All right. Thank you for joining, and let's go Rangers.
Let's go Rangers. Bye.